Welcome to Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM, and on Las Cruces Community Radio, KTEL LP 101.5 FM. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. My guest today is Laura Paskus, an environmental reporter for New Mexico Political Report. She has been writing about New Mexico's water and natural resources, environment, and communities since 2002. She's served as assistant editor of High Country News. She's a radio producer at KUNM-FM, managing editor of Tribal College Journal, and a freelancer for a variety of publications. Her work has appeared in Ms., New Mexico Magazine, The Progressive, Columbia Journalism Review, Women's E-News, High Country News, The Santa Fe Reporter, New Mexico In-Depth, New Mexico Independent, Forest, Audubon, Orion, and Law and Politics. Laura Paskus, welcome to Earth Matters.
Thanks for having me on today, Allison.
It's great to finally get this interview. Laura, you and I have been working on this for a while, so I'm pleased that we finally got you here with us today on Earth Matters. So, Laura, you have done such an amazing job over the past 16 years covering natural resource and environmental issues all around New Mexico. And what does it take to be such a good environmental reporter?
I think, first of all, it helps to be curious and to ask a lot of questions about what's happening. I think for me, it's meant that I have to feel engaged with my community and engaged with my landscape. And I also have learned over the years that it takes having a very thick skin.
Absolutely. I am sure it takes a thick skin. And you've also covered other issues, and I'm wondering, why is environmental reporting so important as opposed to other beats like political reporting?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think part of it comes from I really enjoy learning about the environment in New Mexico. I love learning more about water issues or river issues or wilderness or whatever that might be. It makes me really happy to be learning about that, and I always want to be learning more. So there's that aspect of it. It's personally really interesting to me. But over the years, as more and more newspapers have cut their environment reporting, I feel like especially over the past 5 or 6 years, honestly, it's felt almost like a moral imperative to keep covering these issues that I'm so afraid nobody else will be able to cover.
Yes, absolutely. And it's interesting to me that you started out your career in archaeology, and I'm wondering, how did you make the leap into environmental reporting?
I think the big thing for me was I really loved doing field work. I worked on a bunch of survey and excavation projects all over the southwestern U.S. I loved doing field work, and I really loved learning about the past cultures that we were studying, but also I loved learning about the landscape and being in the landscape doing field work all the time. I became a little bit frustrated while doing archaeology that here we were kind of excavating or surveying or recording these ancient remains of past cultures when the descendants of these cultures were all around us here in New Mexico and not being treated as fairly as they should be and not having a voice that they should. And so I kind of migrated from archaeology into doing tribal consultation. So it was my job to make sure that tribal communities were aware of projects that would impact them or areas that they considered either sacred or that they were culturally affiliated with. And so I worked on the Animas La Plata project up in Colorado, and I worked on some BLM pipelines. And I would go and do these projects where I would meet with the tribal council and I would get their input, and some projects I would bring tribal elders out to the site, and they were gracious enough to share their stories and information. And then I would write up these reports, and the projects would happen the same as they would. And I became really frustrated that there was all this knowledge and that as a society, we were not doing a good job of paying attention to tribal voices. And so I kind of migrated from writing reports that got stacked in filing cabinets to wanting to do journalism.
That's great. And you've had such an impact, I think, in New Mexico and Colorado and other areas of the Southwest with educating people about our environmental challenges and really doing a great job distilling things down for the reader. And I'm wondering, did you need any special training, or is this just something that comes naturally to you to do such a good job and telling the story and telling these complicated issues in a very user-friendly way?
Thank you so much. That's so nice of you to say, and I really appreciate that. I feel like I've been trained along the way, first with an internship at High Country News, where the interns at High Country News are really treated like staff reporters. And you work with great editors, like at the time I worked with Betsy Marston and Greg Hanscom and Paul Larmer. And when I worked at High Country News, you know, we were always editing one another's stuff. I've worked with some really great editors over the years who've helped me become a better writer and communicator. For me personally, I think one of the things is that I always have certain audience members in my mind when I'm writing stories, and some of them are skeptical, and so I want to kind of slow down and explain things a little bit more from the beginning sometimes than just jumping into an issue. And then I also think of people like me who might not know a lot about an issue but are really curious. And so I try to think about those different audiences and write in a way that kind of like, I kind of want to, in a condescending way, but like I kind of want to hold your hand and I want you to come along with me and we're going to learn this thing together.
Well, great. You do a super job. It certainly works for me. And I'm wondering, your work appears online, in print, on radio, and TV. You appear on KNME, the New Mexico In Focus. I'm wondering, what mediums do you find are best to get out environmental stories to the public? Is it all of the above?
I think, so personally, I really love just being able to write and not have a microphone or a camera. So I really love just writing, but I understand that more and more people get their news kind of in bite-sized bits. And so, you know, TV reaches one audience, so our work on New Mexico PBS probably reaches kind of the choir in a way. Probably, you know, people who watch PBS are already kind of interested in these issues. And so what I've been doing more often, especially with online reporting, is bringing stories down to a bite-sized chunk and trying to distill the main point into like a tweet, or my coworkers will put the stories on Facebook, and just trying to at least get that information across people's feeds. And maybe they'll remember the headline or one point, but then still having a long, comprehensive story for those people who really are interested and want to learn more. But I think that it is really hard to reach people. One of the things that I love about New Mexico Political Report is we have print partners all over the state. So I get really excited when, like, the Carlsbad newspaper picks up a story on climate change that their print readers would never have seen otherwise.
Right. And, you know, right now, as you know, we're living in this era of accusations of fake news. And I'm wondering, how are you responding to these attacks on the media as a whole? I mean, is it affecting your work?
I think early on in the Trump administration, I think we were all so shocked to have suddenly been labeled enemy of the people, and President Trump's rhetoric has certainly empowered certain people to act in violent and non-respectful ways toward reporters and editors and news outlets. But for me, in a state like New Mexico, I feel like I basically hear from kind of the same 20 people on a regular basis, and you know, who think that climate change isn't real, or I don't know what I'm talking about, or, and I know that this sounds awful because, well, I don't care if it sounds awful, to be honest. I started ignoring those people. There isn't time to goof around anymore, especially when it comes to water and climate change, and I don't have time to address people who just want to argue for the sake of arguing. So I think a lot of reporters, we've kind of gotten over the initial shock and now just kind of gotten back to business.
Yeah, okay. Well, Laura, we're going to take a break and we'll be back in a minute here and talk more with environment reporter Laura Paskus. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM Silver City and KTEL LP 101.5 FM Las Cruces. This is Allison Civic, director of the Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for our program today. My guest is environment reporter Laura Paskus, who writes about water and natural resources and our environment here in New Mexico. And Laura, as we transition to a new governor, what do you see as the biggest environmental challenges confronting New Mexico?
That's such a good question. I think we have so many, so I'll try to just focus on two. I think the big one is water quantity, but also the less water we have, the better we have to be at taking care of its quality. So I think water issues are huge across the entire state, whether it's the Gila River, the Rio Grande, the Pecos, the San Juan. So our surface waters and also our groundwater, we need to get a handle on what we know about our groundwater resources and what we understand is happening to them, because all across the state we see groundwater levels dropping. So water is the big one. The second one, I think, is really focused on the agencies that are involved with New Mexico's environment issues. So whether that's the Interstate Stream Commission, the Office of the State Engineer, the New Mexico Environment Department, or Energy, Minerals, Natural Resources Department, the Martinez administration had not just hamstrung those agencies, but actively gutted them, either through neglect or by having political appointees who just don't care about science or environmental regulation or transparency. And so really rebuilding those agencies and those commissions and kind of boosting staff competence and morale is going to be huge.
Yes, absolutely. As a person who works with these agencies to get regulations implemented, we are seeing huge issues and sort of not refilling positions after people retire or whatever. And so they're just so understaffed and it's really terrible. So what do you think? Do you think Michelle Lujan Grisham, our governor-elect, do you think, is she focused on these things? Does she see water? Does she see bringing these agencies back to more robust agencies in terms of staffing and just enforcing state laws and regulations? Do you think that she's on the right track going into January?
Yeah. I mean, on the campaign trail, when asked about it, she definitely, like, she understands what's happening with climate change. And she understands that water issues are important. And she understands New Mexico's energy challenges. So I think it will be a matter of kind of for people who think those issues are important to keep reminding her office as we move forward that those issues are huge and important and need action. I think New Mexico is in a, I think she's in a really good position to implement some changes and to move forward on climate and water, in part because the state has a robust budget surplus this year. So rebuilding agencies can be a priority. It can't be like during the Martinez administration, who I think just has the disdain for public employees in general, but also had the excuse of cutting budgets because of the state budget. The next governor will be in a much better position. But I also think that given the severity of our water issues in particular, it would be really hard for the next governor to ignore them. So hitting the ground running would be really great. Like all she has to do, all her staffers have to do is look at some pictures of the state's reservoirs right now and know, okay, we can't delay even a minute in addressing these problems.
Right. And Laura, you have done such a tremendous job in calling attention to the many critical water issues around the state. And you've seen all the various perspectives and conversations that have been going on from academia, from agencies, from communities. So it sounds like you feel that we aren't dealing with our water challenges right now in an effective way. So what should we be doing? How do we improve our water management in New Mexico?
So I think the first thing is having a state engineer who is qualified for that position and who understands New Mexico and its water challenges and is transparent and supports his or her staffers and works with the public and communities and can work honestly and openly with partners. It's almost symbolic, but it is a huge, huge thing that needs to happen in New Mexico. Revamping the Interstate Stream Commission is important. As you all know, down in Silver City, why that's so important. I think the state legislature this year in the coming session, will have a lot to say about water and climate change and some of these structural issues with the Office of the State Engineer and the Interstate Stream Commission. But aside from these sort of more abstract ideas of changing policies and management and working together better, there are some things that we can do right away. And they'll take some work, but for instance, on the Rio Grande, we need to be talking about storing more water upstream and less water in Elephant Butte. And unfortunately, that does require an act of Congress, and it does require the state legislatures being involved. That's one big thing that we could really get moving on right away.
Right. And speaking of another big thing, you alluded to it, at least for us here in southwestern New Mexico, that's the Gila River diversion. And you've covered this story over the years and really done a good job of explaining all of the complexities and making the issue understandable to readers around the state. And what's your perspective on the project here with, you know, 1 year to go before the record of decision must be made?
Yeah, gosh, that whole project, I just find, and I don't even live down there, I find such a heartbreaking lost opportunity. And it's really, it's not even just the money spent and lost, but the goodwill that could have occurred in that part of the state. Here you had four counties kind of being raised up by this congressional legislation and prioritized, and there were so many ways that the state of New Mexico could have helped people in all of these communities come together and think about sustainable water and sustainable future and think about how, you know, you're all neighbors down there and how to take care of one another. And instead, the state, in my opinion, just acted in a totally irresponsible and very divisive way. So that now it seems to me that the project is not feasible. All of this money has been spent and wasted on outside engineers. And it seems to me, as an outsider at least, that communities are very divided down there. You have kind of like angry irrigators and confused conservationists. It really was such a squandered opportunity that it really is heartbreaking in its scope, I think.
Right, and hopefully things will improve here before the end of next year. So we'll be covering that story here on Earth Matters as we enter 2019. And, you know, Laura, you've written extensively on how climate change is exacerbating water and other problems, like especially catastrophic wildfire. And you wrote recently, quote, "We're far past a time when denial or doubt can be indulged." Do you feel like people are waking up? I mean, this issue has been so politicized nationally. I'm wondering now, with all the fires in California right now and some just really destructive fires here in New Mexico, what are you thinking and what do we need to do?
Yeah, I think, gosh, there's so much that needs to be done in New Mexico. And even kind of, we really lost 8 years of planning to the Martinez administration. And we really need to be thinking about energy and where we build communities and how we keep communities and emergency workers safe. And there's so many different facets to how we need to think about climate change and adapt for it and think about the future of agriculture in the state and all these different issues that go across environmental issues to public safety and public health. And I feel like it's really an overwhelming amount of work that needs to be done. But I also feel like in a state like New Mexico, that is such a small state, we have the opportunity to kind of work together in a way that I don't know is always easy in big states with huge constituencies or huge urban-rural divides. I think there are things that we need to do, but I think kind of the first thing is recognizing that we all need to take care of each other. That yes, the way agriculture is done in New Mexico needs to be changed, but that doesn't mean that farmers are the enemies. That we all need to be working together kind of back to back to face this future that feels very uncertain for everyone.
Yes, and how do you feel our governor-elect, Michelle Lujan Grisham, what's her position on climate change from what you've seen?
Yeah, the few times that I've talked to her about it, like, she knows. She understands the issues. I did an event with her in Santa Fe in October where we were talking about the topic of discussion was the oil and gas industry and the Permian Basin. And, you know, she was familiar with the IPCC report that had just come out in October. She definitely understands the issues. And I think it will be hard because the oil and gas industry does have so much influence in the state. And I imagine that they will be gearing up legal opposition to every single thing she might try to do in terms of regulating the oil and gas industry better in New Mexico. But I think my personal feeling versus covering her professionally, like, she is a charismatic, strong, dynamic woman, and I think that she will put up a pretty good fight for the state of New Mexico.
All right, well, let's take a break and then return for the second half of our show with environment reporter Laura Paskus here on Earth Matters. Don't go away. Welcome back to the second half of Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM and KTEL LP 101.5 FM Las Cruces. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with environment reporter Laura Paskus. She's been writing about New Mexico's water and natural resources, environment, and communities since 2002. She's served as assistant editor of High Country News, a radio producer at KUNM-FM, managing editor of Tribal College Journal, and a freelancer for a variety of publications. Her work has appeared in Ms., New Mexico Magazine, the Progressive Columbia Journalism Review, Women's E-News, High Country News, Santa Fe Reporter, New Mexico In-Depth, the New Mexico Independent, Forest, Audubon, Orion, and Law and Politics. And we finished up the last segment, Laura, talking about climate change and where things might go under our new governor, Michelle Lujan Grisham. And so I need to ask you, are things looking up for renewable energy development in New Mexico?
This is so bad because I should know so much more about renewable energy. But it's one of those issues that during the Martinez administration, so little was happening that it kind of faded into the background of my sort of reporting consciousness. And I'm hopeful that with a new governor and new leadership at the state agencies and also a new state land commissioner, that renewable energy does become a bigger issue in New Mexico. And of course, like, even that has its challenges. There's a, you know, some people are very worried about the Sandia transmission line, which ostensibly was being built to move renewable energy to market. But I know that I'm kind of old-fashioned and this will never catch on, but I'm totally still holding out for efficiency, that we could start using less electricity, be more efficient, and we don't need to keep growing with new sources. But that's like the dinosaur talking. So I'm hopeful that we see some changes in our energy mix in the next administration.
Yes, and speaking about energy, as you know, our state budget is overwhelmingly dependent upon oil and gas drilling for revenue, and yet this industry causes severe environmental problems like air and groundwater pollution, and of course there's been a lot of media attention, and you've been one of the reporters calling attention to the fact that in the Four Corners area, we've got this huge methane cloud. And I'm wondering, is there anything to be done to clean up this industry? And again, do you think that this is on the radar screen of our governor-elect?
I think it is. Even as a representative, Lujan Grisham was outspoken about the methane rule with reference to the BLM, but also that rule's up now. The EPA is trying to roll that rule back as well. So she definitely understands the challenges with the oil and gas industry and with methane and climate change. And it's so interesting to me because right before we talked, I was reading this story from a paper in Texas about how the Permian boom has affected Texas's economy. And yes, like, the oil and gas industry is a huge part of New Mexico's economy. But we're still so far behind other states. And so the idea that New Mexico can only survive if we increase oil and gas drilling just really doesn't hold up for me, because we're still so far behind all the other states. And so how, if we have such a booming, robust energy economy, do we continue to fall further and further behind? So I can't buy that we don't exist without oil and gas production continuing to grow. And I agree that it is part of the state's economy, but I think that there are other ways to think about longer-term sustainable solutions, because even if we continue just relying on oil and gas, that's eventually going to run out, and what do we do then? So why don't we start planning now and use some of that revenue to start investing in better ideas for the future?
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And what about all of the groundwater pollution that's been caused by oil and gas? You've got a story this week out on groundwater quality issues and reusing wastewater.
Yeah, that's right. I think a really interesting move forward by the state and the EPA is they convened a working group this summer to look at how to reuse produced water from the oil and gas industry. Because right now the oil and gas industry uses billions of gallons of fresh water in its drilling operations, and then that water is used once and disposed of back into the ground. And so the state just released this white paper, and it's out for comment until December 10th. And they're looking at kind of what needs to happen in the state in terms of legal issues and regulatory issues to start looking at how to reuse that produced water, either within industry, and then they also kind of look at like what would need to happen to this water for it to ever be reused in, for example, like agriculture or pumping it into aquifers, storing aquifers. And, you know, I think critics of this have the point that we shouldn't be talking about how to reuse industry's wastewater. We should be talking about how to get industry to stop using fresh water in the first place. And I agree that it's a really important conversation. But what I was personally happy about this report coming out is that the oil and gas industry has been repeating a falsehood regularly in the media. And then it gets printed in the media, and people start acting like it's fact, and it is not. Ryan Flynn, who's the former Energy or Environment Department Secretary, is now the Executive Director of the New Mexico Oil and Gas Association, has been telling people that NEMOGA's studies show that that industry reuses 90% of its wastewater. And that is false. That is completely untrue. And this report from the three state agencies and the EPA explain that, in fact, most of the wastewater from industry is used once and disposed of underground. So I think this is a really important conversation that we're starting to have in the state.
Yes, that's great. That it has been a recurring topic, like at the New Mexico First Town Hall on Water. For the last two town halls, it's been a big topic of discussion. And Laura, the federal government also has a big impact on our state's environment. And we've got a big groundwater plume at Kirtland Air Force Base, groundwater contamination and safety issues at Los Alamos Labs, and of course the accident and radiation leak at the waste isolation pilot project over in Carlsbad. And what do you think? Is the state going to be able to force these various federal agencies to improve their operations and prevent future environmental problems?
Yeah, boy, that is such an overwhelming issue to look at, whether it's Los Alamos or Kirtland or Cannon. The state really needs to step up its enforcement. And I hope that will happen under the new governor. Governor Martinez was not a strong advocate for New Mexicans and trying to get these federal facilities to clean up groundwater pollution. And I'm hoping, I know that there are still people left within these state agencies who have tried so hard to quietly hold the line these past 8 years. And I really hope that the next governor puts strong leadership in and really lets New Mexico state agencies start standing up for New Mexicans and protecting New Mexico's groundwater and resources and communities. Because these facilities do, I mean, we all know, we can all say they provide jobs, they're important to national security, you know, whatever those things that we always tell ourselves are, the fact is that they are just having a really, really terrible impact on our resources in the state.
Yes, and I'm wondering, Laura, in the next few minutes we have left in this segment, what are some of the developing stories that you're working on now that you think are going to be big here coming up?
I think that the Cannon Air Force Base story is pretty huge. I don't live anywhere near Cannon Air Force Base, and I was really hoping that because it was a big enough story that the Albuquerque Journal or some of the other media outlets would kind of pick up on that, but they don't have either the resources or the interest to do that. So I think I'll end up doing a lot more reporting on Cannon, and as we find out about potential contamination at Holloman, and also not just the jet fuel spill at Kirtland here in Albuquerque, but potential contamination from these emerging substances like we see at Cannon, also at Kirtland. So I think that's going to be a big story. And I like to imagine that in the coming year, the big story is going to be how New Mexico starts addressing its water problems and how we start thinking about long-term sustainability. I'm holding out hope that I get to write some like really thoughtful, forward-looking, not depressing stories in the new year.
Yes, speaking of depressing stories, because you cover a lot of them, are there some hopeful stories out there that that you've covered, or things that give you hope in terms of looking to the future?
I think the thing that really kind of keeps me going is we know what the problems are. Our ability to understand what's happening either with the climate or our snowpack or our forests or our groundwater levels, like the science is there and people are doing amazing work. So we know what the problems are and we even know what most of the solutions would be. So really kind of the third leg of that stool that needs to be shored up is kind of the political societal will part. So if we could just get that together, I think we would actually, you know, kind of things could be good, I like to believe.
Right. And I wonder if things have to, I mean, I hope this isn't true, but I wonder if things have to get even worse before people realize that they have to come together and cross those political divides and cultural divides and work together, as you say, and get one another's backs. And I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens.
Right.
All right. With that, let's take a short break, and we'll be back and continue our conversation with environment reporter Laura Paskus. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters. This is Allison Civic, Director of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. I'm talking with environment reporter Laura Paskus, who writes for New Mexico Political Report, as well as a number of other publications and media outlets. And Laura, you've done some high-profile investigative reporting, such as The Canary in the Copper Mine, about the copper rule that appeared in the Santa Fe Reporter. And of course, this is a really important story for us here in southwestern New Mexico with the Freeport-McMoRan copper mines here. And in this study, you painstakingly documented with links to, I think, something like 70 documents, how former New Mexico Environment Department Secretary Ryan Flynn changed the draft copper rule to benefit Freeport and the copper mining industry. So tell us about your work on that story. And I should say, in the interest of full disclosure, that my organization, Gila Resources Information Project, was a party to the appeal of this rule. So, Laura, tell us more.
Yeah, that was from so long ago, and it really was. I think I was still sort of naive as to the way things were going to work in the Martinez administration. And I was tipped off that there were some funny things going on with the rewriting of the copper rule. And so I, at that time, filed an Inspection of Public Records Act request for everything within a particular time period that was related to the meetings and the analysis and the drafts of that copper rule. And I think, I can't remember, but it was boxes and boxes of documents that I went through, and I scanned a few hundred pages of those documents and was able to see so clearly, you know, kind of, I remember I had gone and gotten like a party card table out of my shed and set it up in my house, in my dining room, next to my dining room table, and kind of laid out all of these documents, printed them out from the scans, and laid them all out by time period, and kind of had this big timeline in front of me that I could look through and highlight and see exactly what had happened, you know, kind of where y'all had come together for these meetings and everyone's providing their input, and then we have this draft, and then we have people's comments, and then we have this changed draft and documents laid out right there. And, you know, for that story, I interviewed so many different people from industry, from, you know, I think you and I talked, experts on groundwater. I interviewed so many people to try to understand what was happening throughout that whole process, and tried time and time and time again to interview Mr. Flynn, who was at the time general counsel, and then the Senate confirmed him as secretary, you know, to ask him, why did you make these changes? And even though I had the documents and had people involved saying the documents were changed, he continued to deny that he had ever made the changes, which I just found baffling. He would never talk to me. He would never answer questions. And yet after the story published, and when I tried to talk to him a number of times after that, he would always accuse me of not having talked to him for the story. And I would say, I'm trying to talk to you now. You know, I've tried to ask you questions and you won't answer them. And I think he was just genuinely thought that the story shouldn't have been printed. And it was a very confusing series of interactions, but the documents show exactly what happened.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the proof was there, and you did such a thorough job, and I think it really made a difference to provide the PDFs of all of those documents right there on the Santa Fe Reporter website, so people could see and go through exactly the chronology. It must have taken you a really long time to put that story together.
It really didn't. It's so funny because the way that journalism works when you're a freelancer is you get paid for the final result no matter what the story was. And I think I probably spent 6 or 7 months working on that story, but it's taken over this room in my house. It was a very long process.
Right. Wow. And what were the lessons learned from doing that story? And I'm just wondering, do you think that maybe other state agency employees thought twice about operating outside of procedure and just sort of doing the bidding of industry that they're supposed to be regulating? I mean, what do you think the impact was of your story?
I think there were a few things. I think that agencies, in particular, agency people who were trying to work with industry, stopped putting so much in what could be considered public record. I think a lot of the communication moved from email to face-to-face or text messages. Or phone calls. I think that the agencies learned how to better put what they were doing sort of below the radar. I think the agencies also over time and the Martinez administration became less willing to actually comply with the spirit of the Inspection of Public Records Act. And so like those were two really negative consequences that I worry Martinez set the bar so low, I even worry about moving forward in a new administration. So for me personally, what changed was I had very much operated under sort of the journalistic expectation that everybody had for years and years, that you ask somebody a question and they either answer it or they tell you when they can answer it. And what Flynn really set the tone for, and the Martinez administration really set the tone for, was to never talk, to never give you the information you need, and then when your story comes out, deny that it was factual because it didn't include their quotes in it, even though they were the ones who refused to talk to you. So I really think kind of the whole fake news and the whole idea of being really aggressively anti-press really precedes Trump in New Mexico.
Yeah, that's interesting. And Laura, you've run into a major lack of transparency from another state agency, one of the most secretive agencies, the Interstate Stream Commission, and you nominated them for the Black Hole Award from the Society of Professional Journalists. That calls attention to government agencies around the country that operate with contempt for the public's right to know. And so I'm wondering, what was your experience with the Interstate Stream Commission? And of course, I should say again that Gila Resources Information Project is a partner in the Gila Conservation Coalition. We've had lots of dealings with transparency issues with the Interstate Stream Commission. So,
yeah, the Interstate Stream Commission, boy, they don't talk to the press. Their director their most recent director has never returned a phone call or an email of mine. Their public information officer doesn't respond to emails or voicemails. Just this past fall, I had problems with the Office of the State Engineer not even bothering to comply with IPRA, which, you know, you can ignore. It's perfectly legal for a state agency to ignore a reporter. I don't think it's ethical, but it's legal. But state agencies aren't supposed to, they still have to comply with IPRA, whether they like you or not.
And so, let's just tell everybody, IPRA is Inspection of Public Records Act. So tell us, just let's take do a little sidebar here. What's Inspection of Public Records Act?
Yeah, so the Inspection of Public Records Act is this amazing law we have on the books here in New Mexico where anyone, a journalist or any person, can ask to see documents that the government has. They're not required to make new documents for you, spreadsheets or analyze data, but if it's an email or meeting notes or a draft document or agendas, all sorts of things like that, you know, we have the right to file what's called an IPRA request with that state agency, and they're required to provide you those responsive documents within a certain period of time.
So the Interstate Stream Commission has not followed IPRA with you. Is that right? That was one of the reasons why you nominated them for this award, because they haven't been a transparent agency.
That's right. Yeah. I had filed a complaint against them through the Attorney General's office, and they claimed that they didn't have to release those documents. And then more recently, the Office of the State Engineer I've had problems with them, with IPRA as well. And so we have these state agencies who are working on sort of our salaries, doing work that's supposed to be protecting our resources, and they're unwilling to be transparent about those operations.
So are there ways that, should we be thinking of beefing up the Inspection of Public Records Act? Are there things that, some lessons learned that you have, or, you know, ways we can make our state agencies more accountable to the public?
Yeah, I think the main thing is the Attorney General's office is the agency that's kind of charged with enforcing IPRA and also the Open Meetings Act. And so if you're having problems with a state agency and you can't rectify them, you can file a complaint with the Attorney General's office. But that takes a really, really long time. Oftentimes, the issue that you're complaining that you're not getting documents about, by the time the Attorney General becomes involved or issues a determination letter, so much time can have passed, months and months, that it's kind of a moot point. So really, I would love to see Attorney General Balderas beef up his enforcement of IPRA. And, you know, maybe now that we have a more robust state budget, we can hire a few people to kind of help out in that section of the office, because it's really important. And that's the only recourse you have as a New Mexican, is to go to the Attorney General's office.
Right, right. Wow. Well, Laura, in just the minute we have left here in our program, do you have any concluding thoughts for us?
I just, to the people who still read environment reporting, I'm so grateful for you. And, you know, to people who are active in their communities and trying to protect landscapes and take care of one another, I'm so grateful for the work that you're doing. And keep it up and take care of yourselves and take care of one another.
All right, Laura Paskus, thank you so much for talking with me today. It's been a real pleasure. I've learned a lot, and I thank you for all of your hard work in covering environmental issues around the state of New Mexico. A podcast of today's interview and past programs are available in the Earth Matters Archive at gmcr.org. That's all the time we have today, and thank you to our audio engineer, Ken Kepler. We hope you'll join us for next week's edition of Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio, 89.1 FM, and KTAL LP, 101.5 FM, Las Cruces.